Hello. No, it's already gone.
Sorry. That's
right. Hello, welcome to another episode of Ricky Gervais' Deadly Serious with me, Ricky Gervais, and the A team. It's Diane Morgan.
Hello.
And little Robin Ince.
Hello.
She giggled early. Just the sight of Robin Ince.
So I was just trying to be serious because you told me off. Because you said before we start recording, you went, do not interrupt me.
Well, no.
I've got a lot of important things to say.
No, I don't mean that. I say, we have a conversation and then I go, and here's David Barry. And you go, oh, and another thing. And I go, I'm interrupting.
At that point, suddenly think that everything that's happened before has had a level of professionalism.
Yeah,
as in, oh, no, now it's ruined the brilliant professionalism of the ramshackle rambling.
Oh, Robin. I love little Robin Ince. We've done that. Welcome, both of you.
It's lovely to be here.
Now, we started trying to inject a bit of professionalism into this early days of this series where I did the Proust questionnaire. I say professionalism. I stole someone else's
It's brilliant, yeah. We started trying to be professional by looking at some professional things and then photocopying them. So that worked out well.
No, but we only got to about five. It was always stuff like perfect happiness, greatest fear, which we ended up saying you can keep adding to. Like,
yeah.
It starts off, you know, arms and legs, no arms and legs in a bucket with someone putting their knob in your eye.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And keep adding, they're getting worse.
Well, that's the point. There's no point in having a league of fears because really there's at least 1,200 different things that you don't want to happen to you. Just
exactly.
When you think being burnt to death, oh, a really slow acid that eats into you?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no. You know, and then, yeah.
Yeah, I know. And most, let's face it, most days the worst thing that happens to you is you stub your toe or you're late. I love following you on Twitter.
If only it was only on Twitter.
I know. He gets so angry. It's either he turns up to a book signing and they haven't got no bloody books, right? Or they said it was only 2 changes. It was 9 changes for me to get from Cardiff to Glasgow. It had to be there in 22 hours and I was late. So I think what you do is you cut it fine. I think you cut things fine.
Well, it's because I do about 7 things in a day.
Exactly.
That's the trouble. Like yesterday morning, I started at 9 a.m. doing a speech to some preschool teachers. And then I end it by doing, you know, Nottingham Skeptics in the pub and with 3 minutes to get to the train.
I know.
But I quite enjoy that. I enjoy those bits.
And you still think you're lazy?
No, not anymore, actually.
Oh,
I've
right,
really given up on that.
Good.
It's been ridiculous. And I just, the thing that I've now found, because I try not to tweet negative things now, I try just to, you know, bring a lot of happiness.
Yeah.
But today getting here was pedestrians have
well,
really
late,
gone
Robin,
downhill.
I mean, were...
Yeah, that was due to bad pedestrians.
Yeah, okay.
That was due to weaving
earlier.
Pedestrians.
Leave earlier, boy.
Yeah.
No excuse. There's always people, mate. There's always people. They didn't come out of nowhere, did they?
That's what I love, the idea that you somehow getting on time in any other way than being picked up by your chauffeur, cuddled slightly, placed in the back of the faux ivory limousine. Faux ivory, not real, would not touch that.
Good one. Having a go at me for not liking elephants slaughtered for no good reason. Nice one, Robin.
That is one of my favourite things. Where my favourite tweets you do are, thank you so much, everyone, for saying humanity is the greatest thing in the world. And thank you very much for listening to me saying, lions are good, stop killing them.
I do thank people for retweeting things about animals and signing petitions because I want to let them know how easy it is to change opinions. It really is easy. You sign a petition, right? It takes 100,000 signatures for a petition to have, like, to stop puppy mills, right?
Yeah.
And it gets heard in Parliament and the laws change. Now, 15 years ago, it would take you a year standing outside Tesco's trying to get signatures. It really would. And on Twitter, you can do it with a retweet. You can do it in a few days. So I really do thank them because it actually changes the law.
Well, that's why democracy...
Oh, it doesn't do anything. It's like marching, isn't it? I always think, oh, what does it do? Marching.
But it does. Signing petitions because they have to hear it in Parliament and then they do a vote on it. And sometimes people didn't know things are going on. There's so many clandestine things. I've been naive. Mm. I don't realise the horror that goes on into everything. You sort of, there's some things that are obvious. You see a picture of a rhino, it's been killed, it's pregnant, they've ripped its horn out, and it's for Chinese medicine that does nothing. It's keratin, right? And then then it gets more and more subtle. Like, people don't realise, you know, the trim on a parka is a rabbit that was probably fucking died in
agony.
Well,
it was probably fucking, to be honest.
Yeah.
That's what they're known for.
Do you know what I mean,
though?
So, because all these things are coming to light for the first time because of social media, it's really quick and easy to change them.
Well, that's why democracy's never been better in the UK and the US. Oh, hang on.
Robin, you're getting very cynical.
This petition
you're getting
thing
very
of yours
is
working.
Canada Goose, are they
called? What?
Canada Goose.
I think they do. I think there's... I don't know about the... Oh, I think the protest were that they used fur. I think the protest that they used fur at all. I don't think they're any crueler than anyone else who uses fur. The industry of fur is so cruel. So sometimes, right, they think, it was like shot and then skinned. No. Things like mink, they keep mink cages, right, that they can't even feel the floor. So cause they can just piss and shit, right? They're all their fucking miserable life. Then they're anally electrocuted and they're skinned. I mean, some fur is skinned alive because it's easy to let the fur in when they haven't got the technology. It's fucking horrendous. So, Robin, don't take the piss out of people who care about...
I care about animals a great deal. Humans can fuck off. See, that's what I'm wondering. What if some of your jokes that do upset people, what if you found out they upset puppies? So if some of your jokes about...
What has got in...
No, Robin. No, but that's what I'm interested. What if you go? Hang on a minute.
Has it changed?
They were showing one of Ricky's specials, and it turns out some of the little terriers they got a little bit upset by some of it. Well, and would you then go? I'm not going to do that.
You're allowed to joke about animal cruelty, and you're allowed to joke, and you're allowed to insult a puppy, but you're not allowed to actually do animal cruelty.
No, I don't mean about puppies.
Physically hurt them.
I mean maybe some of the other jokes do. What if some of the puppies you go? Oh, I didn't know terriers found that. Oh, they're a bit upset about that fact.
What has got into Robin?
No, I'm asking. I'm saying if they showed some of your stuff. And they go, we're doing a screening for various different animals of humanity, and we found out that one of the cows was really upset by one of the jokes. Would you go, hang on a minute, I didn't know that offended Highland cattle.
Would you stop? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I'm fucking a vegetarian way before him.
Yeah. So
I'm not vegan. I really tried to be a vegan. Nice. And then you find out they go, you go, Oreos. Well, obviously I didn't really try, otherwise I'd be a vegan. But, you know, you go, what about Oreos? And they'll go, the trouble with Oreos is sometimes they leave the factory window open and some milk particles get in. You go, bloody Oreos.
Well, no, there are things beyond veganism that isn't just enough to sit back and go, I don't consume animal products. Because things like palm oil. Now, palm oil, you think, well, that's vegan. Well, actually, they destroy bits of rainforest and they kill orangutans. You know, you have to be part of the meat industry if you have a cat, because you feed it things like chicken and beef, and you know, because it is cruel to keep a cat. And
is there nothing else you can give it?
No, they need a thing in meat.
And you're a vegetarian.
There's no you could have a vegetarian dog and it'd be all right, but no, a cat needs things, certain chemicals
also,
in meat.
So it's all about, because I think part of it is I was talking about in the stand-up show that I just finished doing. I talked a little bit about. I said, who here's a vegan? And people always worry because they think I'm going to pick on them. So I'm not going to pick on you because I don't understand why people get very angry about vegans. They always go, vegans wanting more. Toleration for animals, closing abattoirs.
Yeah, exactly.
And as a vegetarian, vegans are great because we used to get all the shit. If you went into a house and you was like, I'm sorry, I can't have that. I'm a vegetarian. They go, well, what can you eat then? You go, anything except meat. And they go, we might not have anything except meat, right?
Yeah.
Whereas now, if you say you're vegetarian, they go, God, I'm so relieved. Thought you were going to say vegan. We've had three of them round in the last 4 years. We haven't got any more seeds left. Yeah. And it's just that thing where you go, I don't see what... There will be a point where it turns out your ethics or whatever, there's a little blurred area, but that's not a problem. The fact that you go, okay, you don't eat meat, but your cat eats, you know, whatever it is, trout in jelly.
Yeah.
Well, that's all right. You've done something.
The thing is this, right? You can't criticise a vegan. That's crazy. You're too kind, right? You can sometimes criticise their smugness or the way they go after... a vegetarian for not being vegan, but they're rare and they're still doing it because they really, really believe it. But I think all you can do is be slightly better today than you were yesterday. Mm. That's all. And, you know, and it's all awareness. Some people don't know what goes on in an abattoir. They think the cow goes, oh, thanks very much. I'll go to sleep now. You know, they don't.
I like the fact you've made the cow being murdered Jimmy Carr. That was a bit. I thought Sigmund Freud. Yes. I think that's India. Yeah. I mean, that's what I. That's why I find it interesting. You know, when sometimes people get really angry about halal meat, And then if you go straight off to the corner chicken shop, you go, oh, you don't seem as worried about, you know, I think that's a weird bit of animal welfare thing sometimes where you go, well, very angry about that particular area of cruelty to animals. But then it turns out that everything else you consume, you're not there going, can I just check where this people
come
from?
No, well, there's two things there. One, you're right. Some people pretend to care about how because they are racist and they never did before. Just like the people on International Women's Day who are racist go, what about all the women in Iraq? Like, you care. You know, it's just having a go at liberals. But as a principle, you should worry about religious slaughter because it has a get-out clause. And there is no... you should be angry at an animal that has more torture than is necessary just because religion says so. So... do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, no, I understand that. But what I'm saying is I think it's interesting. If you really get on a very high horse, and don't use a horse, use a vegetarian alternative.
Yeah.
But you know, if you get really angry...
Of course.
And then you go, oh, but there's no anger.
Of
and
course.
That, and that's where I agree with you. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be going, oh, do you know what? I don't think that's a very good idea either.
Yeah. It's hard to be beyond reproach. It's hard not to be a hypocrite. It's very hard because there's always something. Mm-hmm. It's like I see people saying, you don't invest in banking, do you? They're terrible. I go, you write for the so-and-so paper or you work for this. You know what I mean? You can always point the finger back. So, like, you do something worse. It's about integrity, and integrity is about not doing something that you don't agree with. That's all. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, some people... what's his name that was on here? Mark Watson. He got terrible grief from a couple of comedians because he did a cider advert. I want to go, well, hold on. One of them writes for the Daily Mail. The other one writes for the... you know what I mean? It's like... It's weird. If you start pointing the finger, you've got to be pretty, you know, above it all. And that's really, really hard. But what you can do is say, I don't do this. You might want to think about it. I don't think anyone... Some people just...
It's so difficult, isn't it?
It's a mess.
And that's why that's part of the problem, which is that you can always find the Achilles heel of different people and it's much easier to find theirs than notice that your heel... You know, that's what... And I just don't...
It's been 2 years of that. It's been 2 years of don't listen to him about this thing because he did this thing. Well, it's like I do a Winston Churchill quote about... freedom of speech. And someone goes, you know, he was a racist. I go, not in this quote he isn't. Not in this actual tweet that I'm talking about he isn't. It's like, yeah, everyone does good and bad things, but I'm talking about the good thing he said.
There's good and bad in everyone. That's what McCartney and Wonder
exactly.
said.
Exactly. Eh? Well, I would play that, but I'm not going
McCartney
to.
McCartney and Wonder.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought I'd give you a nice
there
segue
there.
There's
good and bad in everyone. Yeah. Ebony and Ivory. They live together... in perfect harmony on my piano keyboard. Are those ivory, Paul? Oh, shut up. Let's play a song, shall we? Don't interrupt, Robin. This is David Bowie and Starman. David Bowie and Starman. I'm here with Diane Morgan, who hasn't got a word in edgeways because Robin got all feisty in answering back to Ricky.
Just talking about himself in the third person. Welcome to the next level of celebrity. Yeah, you're listening to old Uncle Ricky. Is Uncle Ricky speaking now? Am I Ricky? I don't know. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm not. I hope I am Ricky. Anyway, Rick, what do you want to say? Well, I want to say bloody hell.
I think it's like he's a little teenage rebel, right? And he's standing up to Papa. Right.
Oh, don't make yourself Papa. Yeah, Jesus Christ. Right. Some of your fantasies are frankly.
No, he's coming, he's going, right, I'm gonna show him that I'm feisty as well, right? And it's like, I remember, right, Robin, right, when he first came to me, right? I breastfed
don't
him.
Don't say when I first came to you.
Can you help me?
What happened was, do you remember what really happened? We sat down and we started working out different dream versions of the equivalent of Hollywood Squares, the British version of that, Celebrity Squares. Yeah. That's what we did for the first 5 years because you do a very slow game.
Yeah.
It starts off, oh, it's normal. This guy's normal. He's just interested in weird old chobby stuff. Yeah. This is normal. Yeah. This is getting weird. He's making strange noises.
Mm-hmm.
I wish he'd stop squeezing my face. It's a trap.
Yeah, I know. But now you're more irresistible than you've ever been. He's like an old vicar,
bald,
isn't he?
Cardi.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think of Robin, Diane? Right. So you've seen him It was the first time you met him here?
No, we met things like Old Rope and stuff, didn't we? And, yeah, there's comedy club, New Music.
So what's your evolution of Robin? What do you think of him from... I knew him from boy to man, but you probably just know him from man to old man.
Man to man. Well, don't start saying that. That's where rumours begin.
I mean, he seems like a nice bloke.
He is.
He doesn't have the same effect on me that he has on you.
No, I know, but that's just a little thing.
But I can sort of see his hair is a bit fluffy.
Yeah.
And he's got a little cardi.
Oh!
Good little pencil glasses.
Oh, God!
Come on, let's get back to animal rights.
I don't want to squeeze him.
I know. He's podgy as well. He's never done any... He's just grown. He's like, no, he's not.
Oh, don't you start saying, I'm podgy. I've noticed you've stopped doing so many topless photo shoots since you stopped having training. That was my first... I've been doing a lot of training. I think this one will be me being Jesus, just with my top off. Do you want to do another one of those? No, I haven't done training for a couple of months, so then you'll find them a little bit wobbly. Black T-shirt, all dressed as Winston Churchill.
Right, come on. What is this like to listen to?
I don't know. It's your fucking show. You're leading it. You can't fucking turn on us. You ask him. You ask people these things.
We've got so much talent between us and it's all wasted.
Well, this is the good time of wasting it.
I just feel like I'm watching television.
I know. I know, yeah. It's weird, isn't it?
You did have a good question for Robin.
Yeah.
Now have one for Diane first.
It's been a load of rubbish.
Yeah, we did these, right? But we didn't get onto them. There's about 35 and we only did about 6, right? Okay, Robin. Which living person do you most despise? That's a tough one, isn't it?
Do you know what? I really try hard, even though there's people who annoy me and there's people that are awful, but I really try hard not to. I find difficult, right? I'll give you a much broader thing, because in turning it into an individual...
Yeah, I don't want to say a name.
...plays into the whole kind of social media game. But what I find the most difficult is when you watch someone who the disparity between the way they treat the lowest person in the room with the least power and the highest. Like if you're working on a TV thing and you see someone go, go and get me a ham sandwich, bloody hell, I've still got my ham sandwich. And then the executive comes in and they go, oh, hello, by the way, can I just say, I really love the work you're doing. Where's my fucking ham sandwich? That kind of thing. Yeah. Anyone who does that. Or really, we're talking about hypocrisy. And there is, I think most of us, it has been a bit of a shock to see how muscular people's hypocrisy is. And I know it's a boring example to say, you know, someone like Trump or whatever, but that bit where you go,
I
use him as an illustration, though, that illustration where you just go, wow, this is what he'd be saying if Obama had done this, and this is what
of course.
And that's a bit where you're right earlier on. We're all aware of the fact that everyone's a hypocrite. The question is, how aware are you of your hypocrisy,
and how much damage you do?
Yeah, and
I think
that.
That
kind of stuff.
That's there.
I think it's
yours. Diane just says
well,
one.
Well, I said it off air, didn't I? I can't say it on air now. But you know, I've got three people I despise.
Yeah.
Probably
Why
four,
do you
but
despise?
The fourth, you don't know.
Right, okay.
What is your, in terms of despising...
This is people you haven't met, is it? And the most interesting thing is those irrational hatreds. Rather than people you actually despise because of a rational reason.
Yeah.
The ones that, the sort of irrational hatreds of certain people, they're more interesting.
Yeah, if we're not...
The way his hair flicks up at the back.
Oh, no.
To stab him.
Oh, you really...
Those kind of things.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That's much more interesting.
Yeah.
Because when I was at drama school... There was a boy there who I hated. Everyone else loved him.
Oh,
isn't he lovely? There's something about him.
It's getting away with it because that's you thinking he's getting away with it. Because if everyone hated him, you wouldn't hate him. You'd think he deserves it.
He wasn't a horrible person.
Oh, really?
No, he was really soft.
Right.
He was so soft. He was. Sort of wet. He was very wet.
Right.
And there was something I've never experienced
before.
I think he was doing it on purpose, though.
I'm seeing a version in your head of that film, The Shape of Water. He was like soft and wet.
I haven't seen it. Yeah. Oh. But, that's more interesting. I've never experienced that before.
But is that about him or is that about the fact that you're going, why does everyone love him when he's just this damn thing?
Well, if they hadn't said that, I'd still hate him.
Do you think
it's
so?
Nothing to do well, with I think going, I, oh, isn't he lovely?
I take an instant dislike to people who want to be loved too much. That I mean, that is probably what up there. And I see that. Obviously, we see it mostly in celebrity, but you see it not in celebrity as well. But people who just want to be liked and loved. And I'm not even talking about attention seeking, because we all do that. We're writers and comedians and actors. We're all attention seekers. But it's people who just... they're desperate to be loved.
But all comics are, right? There's such a, you know...
But it's got to be on your terms. There's some people who just do anything. They go, where did I go wrong? OK, I'll start doing this then if you love me.
Those people who, you know, like the ones where there used to be that a lot of people talking about, saying the unsayable. And we talked about this before. Yeah. And most of those comics that were grouped in that, they weren't, because they were playing big venues and people were cheering and laughing.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of that comic goes, don't care what people think. If you do a whole 2 weeks with them being booed off and run out of town, eventually they do go, I have to admit, this showbiz was a very bad idea. I think I do care what people think. I'm on fire again.
Yeah, exactly. I know, exactly, yeah. But, I mean, I think we don't like people, particularly in Britain, we hate people. That wasn't the end of the sentence.
It could have been with you, though. Yeah. It really could have been.
Yeah, I know, I agree. No, but I think it does come down to hypocrisy and people getting away with something. We want people to get their comeuppance. We want people to, like that bloke, if he deserved not being liked, but he was liked.
But he didn't. I know he didn't deserve my hatred.
So that is just you then?
There's just something about him.
Yeah.
It's like the opposite of how you feel about Robin.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
I just...
That's so funny. So it could be some kind of pheromone that he gave off?
I don't know what it was. Maybe it's something to do with the past life.
I think it's because you want to shake him and say, stop being so wet.
So wet.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I don't know what you mean because I don't know him.
I'd do an impression of him, but, you know, someone might be listening and then he'd know.
Well,
the impression would be so accurate that he'd know who he was.
Say it, though, because that'd be nice to know if he's listening.
No, because everyone would know then. They'd go, oh, it's...
Right, OK.
Well, you could deny it.
B must have known, because you're not someone who hides your emotions. I've seen you.
Because I kicked him up the arse once.
Did you? What, literally?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that? Was it in the middle of a play?
Sorry, wait.
He held the door open for me and said, after you. And I said, no, after you.
This is amazing, Diane.
It was awful. And then he went through and I couldn't stop my leg from flying out. And I kicked him between the legs and he dropped.
Fucking hell, Diane.
The soft bit. Mm. And he just went down.
Do you mean the soft bit? You mean the testicles?
It went round the school like wildfire. Like Diane's kicked up the arse. And people found it funny.
Well, it's sort of funny, but only because it's...
Because he was so nice, and it seemed so unlikely of me, and it was. I couldn't stop my leg, just... And I kicked him up the arse, and he fell.
Sorry. Wow.
I know.
Wow.
But I've never experienced that before or since.
No.
This irrational...
So there's no one else you've had that.
When you kicked him up the arse, what did he say after?
Ow.
And what did he say? Why did you do that?
No, he knew I hated him.
So this is an attack. This is basically a vicious attack on someone.
I used to look at him like that.
This is radio. They can't see how you're looking.
How old were you?
Sort of baring my teeth.
So this was 1920 when you were at drama school?
Yeah. Sort of 22, something like that it was.
And how do you feel about it now? What would you say to him if he saw
you? Do you know, if he walked in now, I think I'd still feel the same.
I don't think he'd mind walking in. It's walking out he's more worried about.
Don't you feel guilty? Don't you want to say sorry?
Yeah, part of me is like, what is wrong with me? But if other people haven't experienced this, I think it's only because they haven't met the right person.
Well, this is...
I think so. Everyone's got someone out there.
But I think there's normal irrational...
The opposite of a person that they love.
Wow.
But you don't know that you wouldn't do it. You don't know that you wouldn't.
No, but there's people that make my skin crawl. I see them and they pop up on Twitter or pop on TV. I want to go, I want to punch him in the fucking face, right?
Well, you might.
But I never would.
You might. Your arm just might fly.
Because I know they don't deserve being punched in the face for being a prat or wanting love.
But I knew that rationally.
That's amazing.
It just happened.
That's incredible.
I know. So like a character as well.
But that's amazing that you couldn't control yourself.
No, it just flew out.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what if he'd have called the police and said this woman assaulted
him? I would have just admitted it. Yeah, I kicked him up the arse.
And why did you kick him up the arse, Miss Morgan?
But you missed the arse.
Well, look at him, I say.
Right. I don't think the police would go, fair point. He's
they
wet.
Do. Someone else must have seen it.
But that is really, because you're right, that thing
that's
where
amazing.
Love being something which is not
a
in
lot
any
of people
way...
said, oh, well, love's very close to hate. Maybe you love him. And I was that made me furious.
No, but that's what I think is interesting, is this is as irrational as falling in love.
To yeah, fall it is, in hate, you can't
to
help.
Have such a dense falling in hate.
Yeah, it was like falling into hate with someone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you think there was a? Do you think there's part of you that, I mean, you couldn't help it and it grew? Like you thought
I'd in your... I'd foster it in my mind. I'd sort of embellish it and I couldn't
but
help...
But what's amazing about this
about
is...
Thinking doing things and...
What's amazing about this is that you've admitted that it's totally irrational and you've got no reason. Usually people go, oh, it's just this or oh, he did this once or I think he does this. But you're not even trying to justify your actions. It was just absolutely visceral that your leg had to go out and kick him square in the bollocks.
Yes.
The fact that he went down...
Straight away, dropped like a sack of spuds.
Fucking hell. Hold on, though.
Yeah.
You didn't want to name him, but he must know who he is because he's the one who got kicked in the bollocks and went down like a sack of spuds.
Do the impression.
Yeah. So you might as well do the impression now.
Come on, it's silly.
You might as well, though.
It's silly.
Because everyone knows who you kicked in the bollocks.
No, it would be nice.
Go on,
don't feel terrible. You've told a whole thing about how you have an irrational, full-on hate for someone for no reason and you've kicked them in the balls, right?
This is more a confession than...
Without any sense of control of your leg, a possessed leg, like in one of those old 30s horror films where you've had the leg of a murderer, like, sewn onto you.
Yeah.
So you've said all these things about this poor, poor guy who probably now has never had children due to the testicular damage, and he's out there alone now, just a middle-aged guy who's never really made it in the business. And
go on.
Can't do it. I know that people that have been to drama school would listen.
But
to
they
it
know now. Who it is because he's the one you kicked in the bollocks, and he went down like a sack of spuds.
You want me to just do his voice?
Yeah.
Right. You would say things like this. So he would sort of talk like that, he would sort of hesitate with his voice, and he would sort of a bit like no.
I want to kick him in the bollocks.
No,
I want to kick him square in the bollocks.
No, listen to me, because like I would like that.
Wow.
Oh, God, if only you listeners could see the eyes. The eyes are now three times the size they were before.
This is like a weird confession, isn't it, Robin? Yeah. It's like we're a bit scared, aren't we, really?
All right. Well, now we're up the game. I'll tell you who I killed. So,
well, let's play a song, and I think Diane needs to get some therapy.
Calm down.
This is Lou Reed, Satellite of Love.
Satellite's gone up to the sky.
Lou Reed, Satellite of Love. I'm here with Diane Morgan, who's just confessed an irrational hatred to someone so much that she actually attacked them, physically attacked them and beat them up just because he talked funny.
I didn't beat him up. I just kicked him up the arse.
You attacked him hard enough for him to drop to the ground in agony.
It's only because I touched the wrong bit.
What were you wearing?
What was I wearing?
This is getting weird.
Were they sort of like...
Do you mean like steel-toe cap boots?
Or pointy shoes or something?
Oh, right. It's on my feet.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Probably Converse trainers. It was that kind of time.
Well, soft, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but that means must have been a lot of power behind it. If your winkle pick is fair
down,
enough, but like
so...
soft shoes, bang.
That's so funny. Yeah. That's so funny. Well, we've done that. Which living person do you most despise? Robin, this one's for you, right? What is the quality you most like in a man?
It's weird because I say this shows that obviously a level of self-loathing.
Oh, the penis! But, right, next question.
Well, hang on a minute. What?
Well, that's what you're thinking. Otherwise, yeah.
I don't remember saying that.
Yeah, no, but that's obviously.
I presume I'll say it in the edit. Bloody hell.
Go on then. What's the most?
No, I think it is, and as I was going to say, it is ironic. But that bit to actually shut up for a minute and listen to someone else.
Is that a dig at me?
Pay attention. No, it is.
You can talk. Fuck me. Talk
That's
about
what I just said. I said it's ironic coming from me. Jesus fucking Christ. It's ironic coming from me, and it shows that it's something that I don't really have. Bloody hell, mate. I can't believe it. Fucking hell. You're on eggshells today. Not on eggshells, cruel.
Fucking hell.
Right.
So it's people.
Or I'll tell you what, someone who, if you're with, right, genuinely. You know this from, like, showbiz and all that. Someone who doesn't just talk about their career, and if you're with your partner, they might actually go, hello, and what's your name, and who are you, and what do you do? That is a thing, which is...
Jane calls those offenders. Like, a famous person comes up and sort of, like, pushes Jane out of the way and just talks to me because I'm famous. Mm. And it's like... Jane calls it offenders. And there's like, there's a list of people that only talk to famous people or want to talk to famous people. They don't acknowledge anyone else in the fucking room. Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? I think that's people who always wanted to be famous and became famous early. Do you know what I mean? It defined them. But I agree with that. It's sort of embarrassing.
It's awful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just... Because it's like they didn't have a real life. Mm. They didn't do anything until... Yeah. It's like there's people who jump around as kids and go, look at me, look at me.
Yeah.
And it's those people on... we've talked about this, reality shows, where they beg the audience, oh, I want this more than anything. You want to go, what's that got to do with me? I'm fucking doing a U-bend here, mate. We'll carry on with it. But why are you... It's like begging. It's so weird. So, yeah, those needy... Again, it comes down to needy people.
No, but it's about the bit of just ignoring. Because I remember before, like, when we were on tour, sometimes mentioning someone and you go, oh, I've always found them really nice. And I went, of course you fucking found them really nice, because they're going, bloody hell, there's Ricky Gervais. He might have a job for me. Me, you know, it's a 20 quid gig in a room below a pub. Bloody hell, he might have a 20 quid gig in a room below a pub for me. He might be able to introduce me to some chemists.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's like your point again. They treat the executive producer different to the runner. Yeah exactly.
I think that is a... Because that's what I think my wife, very early on, the first comedy after-show party that she went to, and there was a comic who just immediately, all he talked about was himself. At no point did he say, and what do you do?
A room full of comics is horrendous anyway, though.
It doesn't have to be. It can be quite nice,
actually. No, it depends. It depends, yeah. But those people are sometimes are looking round. Why did he get that job? Why didn't I get that job?
There's a lot. It's like some of the...
Who's your agent?
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't matter. It's funny, is it? And people say to me, young comics, and they go, oh, I'm having trouble with our agent. I go, why are you relying on your agent?
Yeah.
It's your career.
Your agents don't do much, do they? They just deal with the work that comes in.
Yeah, no one cares about your career like you do.
Yeah.
It's that. Why do people expect other people to care about their career?
Yeah.
It's the world doesn't owe you a living. Mm. And it makes me angry. I want to go, look, just...
Well, no, but I think that's because people think that's how show business works. You sign up to big agent and then Squiggy McGuire gets you that kind of prime time.
It does if you're a fucking
doormat. No, but that's how people think it does work. But you're right. I mean, nearly everything that I do is like, oh, I've got an idea. I'll put that... Oh, can you just make sure it's in the diary with my agent or whatever? And that's
exactly.
it. And
you generate stuff yourself.
Yeah, because no one else would want to touch the stupid ideas I come up with. I was thinking about that bit of comedians back. So when I first started gigging, I remember going to do a gig, and the actual paid acts, they didn't talk to me at all. And then I went and did my set and it went down well. And then they were like, oh, well done. That was really good.
Oh, really?
And I said, why didn't you talk to me beforehand? And they went, well, what if you died? What are we going to say to you? And I went, well, you just say, well, I'll tell you why that bit didn't work, or I'm sorry it didn't go very well. And
was
their alibi. Oh, there's another shit, you know, who knows how shit this person's going to be. I know that sometimes back in like some of the bigger London clubs, when the open spot walks in, it is like everyone's playing little mind games, that.
Yeah.
And it shows so much fear.
Yeah, because tough crowd tonight.
I try and say one nice thing, and even if they were awful, I go, oh, I love that joke. I just try and say one thing. If they say, what about the rest? I'd be in trouble. But I try and say one thing, because it's just easier. It's not, it's not that I'm leading them on. It's like, I don't want to be nasty. No one wants to hear. When they've come on stage, no one wants to hear what went wrong. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's weird.
Yeah.
Also, you know when you've died in your
house. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know.
Some people
exactly.
don't, though.
Yeah, I've seen people selling their merchandise after pretty much being booed off, and you can't go out and sell the T-shirts.
Yeah, it's all right, you know.
Are they in denial, or have they never had a good gig?
I don't think they ever had a good gig, so they're judging it from...
I wasn't
booed off, so that was when all right.
I've seen people who've done very well and then done, my trouble was, and I mean, apart from frequently, anyway, look, doesn't matter about that, but sometimes when I'm doing solo shows, and I've stopped this now, but I used to have nights, so there's that great thing that the therapist Philippa Perry talked about, and you can read more about that in my book, I'm a Joke and So Are You, available from Atlantic. But anyway, she talked about this thing where, I thought I'd get a fucking plug in, might as well get something out of this.
We can do plugs.
But it's this bit where... She said, the trouble with being human is you judge everyone else from their exterior and yourself from the interior.
Yeah.
And that sometimes happens on stage. Sometimes you go on and you do, like, if I'm doing a 2-hour show and then there's a couple of bits where I think, I don't think that worked. And then it starts, and then I'll end up going on social media going, oh, yeah, I'm sorry about that. And then people go, we had a lovely time. What are you talking about? And I think, oh, no, I've just ruined.
You do that all the time.
No, I've stopped that now. I don't do it. I very rarely, in fact, the run of stuff that I've been doing recently, more often than I've been quite happy with it. You know, every now and again, I will then go, hang on a minute, that was fine. There was that little bit there which didn't work quite as well as I'd hoped, but then we moved on to another joke. It doesn't matter.
No, it
but
doesn't
that
matter.
Bit
yeah.
where you can do exactly the opposite. You can always be picking apart so much that you can take a perfectly decent night, and because it wasn't right up there, you go, oh, the shame.
Well, I think that's it. I think a lot of comics you expect to be carried down the street after their third gig. And it's crashing. I think, well, all the jokes work. The jokes, I've worked on the jokes, I'll just say them. But the fact is, you could do exactly the same joke, and after 50 times of saying it, it's 10 times as good, just because of the rhythm. Do you know what I mean? And
Weird thing. Coming back to, there's a bit that I talk about at the moment when, again, this isn't for a stand-up show, it's for the stuff about the book, where I talk about inner voices. And I used to have this story, which I used to just tell occasionally, and it was mildly. And now it's like when I walk around the house, I talk to myself.
Do you?
Yeah. And I talk to myself in different voices sometimes, just like it. And I sing songs in made up language and all manner of stuff, right? And sometimes there's an actor, you might know him, Nicky Henson, right? He was in Syriana, he was in Witchfinder General, he was in Fawlty Towers, right? And he had one of those 1970s voices, really kind of, you know, the kind of voice of someone who's got a cravat on or an open neck shirt, they're about to get in the speedboat and go looking for girls.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of voice. Yeah. And some days I would just walk around the house going, oh, I don't know what I want to drink today. Maybe a cup of tea. I don't think Nicky Henson would have a cup of tea, so not for me either. Right? And I'd just do that for the whole day. And then I got this part in a radio play, and Nicky Henson was in it.
Oh.
And I got there first, and the producer went, oh, here's the script, sorry, it's a little bit late. And I went, Harriet Walters in it, she's brilliant. Nicky Henson. She went, do you like Nicky Henson? I went, I bloody love Nicky Henson. I think he's a brilliant actor. We think he's brilliant as well. That's why he's in this. I said, I know this might sound a bit weird, but some days I spend the whole day walking around my house, talking to myself as if I were Nicky Henson. She went, really? I said, yes. She went, you should tell him that.
Oh,
actors
no.
like that kind of thing.
No. Oh.
And I did, and they don't.
Don't do
and it's like this thing, right, where...
So,
I chatting to him, I said, oh, I love that Hells Angel movie you did, Psychomania.
Tell him exactly how you brought that
up. I quite often talk about... I'm not very... If I work with people that interest me or they've done weird stuff, I'll sometimes say, I fucking love that weird thing you did.
So what did you say to him? I didn't
immediately go, hello, Nick Henson, I do your voice. Not just in my head, out loud, when I'm deciding what I want to drink.
How did you work it in there?
Well, we started talking about Psychomania, which is this Hell's Angel movie with George Chandler as well, and it's a great Hell's Angels movie. I really highly recommend it.
You're such a fucking nerd.
It's yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And I've seen the alternative, and it didn't suit me. And so Psychomania, I love, and I was saying, oh, Witchfinder generally told me a couple of stories about working with Vincent Price and stuff.
Yeah.
I said, I know you probably a lot of people talk about Psychomania. Oh, bloody Psychomania. Yeah, he was like at the Royal Court at night and during the day making a low-budget Hell's Angels movie.
That's funny.
And I said, I just love that voice, you know, your voice. And I don't know how, I think I just kind of said to him, I said, I love your voice. Sometimes when I walk around the house, I just do different people's voice and I kind of do a version of yours. And he was like, oh, great. And then when we went on stage, it was like he moved the mic a little bit further away from me as if I wasn't quite in arm's reach in case I'd suddenly turn and I'd suddenly go, you're not Nicky Henson, I am. You know, but it felt like, looking back, it felt like an ill-judged compliment.
Yeah,
you know that. It is a weird thing
if you're that sort of person, because he's probably met a lot of weird people.
Yeah,
and to say I go around the house pretending to be you.
I pretended to be you. I said I really that voice. I do this kind of weird cod version of your voice, and I talk to myself a lot when I walk around the house. Sometimes I just go Nicky Henson, and
he initially
there was definitely a look in his face. Like, oh, it's nice to know that some people are like 20 years younger than me. I'm still fondly remembered in a way that they'll walk around the house pretending to be me.
That's
a nice
amazing.
Thing. Yeah. And then I think he thought, it's a nice thing, but then I've seen the film Psycho. And, you know, and then that's when it started, I think, to you know, just... Sorry, but I was just saying that, like, I used to tell that story in weird shows, and it was, and then there was a point where suddenly, I don't know why, people found it more entertaining. So maybe because I allowed a greater level of madness out.
So the quality you most like in a man is
Nicky
what?
Henson's voice.
Right.
If a man has Nicky Henson's voice and maybe wearing a cravat, things are looking up.
I like fluffy people with little glasses. Yes, it's podged up. Yeah. It's podged up. And
whoever they are, because that's not me. I'm Nicky Henson.
Right, here, Robin. What do you regard as the lowest depth of misery?
Oh, man, that's hard, isn't it?
It's hard, isn't it? Yeah.
Because, again, you can't help but end up going, well, you just kind of sat in the burnt-out village having watched all your family tortured to death.
Okay,
you
know, then, let me change that then. What was your lowest...
What was your own?
Yeah, lowest depth of misery. Do you remember that, or do you don't want to talk about it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's really hard because I've got a kind of predilection for pointlessly getting miserable, and then that disappears
very quickly.
I said
to Diane before the show, he's probably going to say supporting me on tour.
Well, I have to admit, there were a couple of moments. I think it wasn't the lowest point of misery, but I knew things were going downhill because we still had 60 gigs to do. That time when you rang up when we were staying at a hotel in Leeds and you got woken up because the deluxe room was also next to the cleaner's cupboard, which is such a bad idea. So, oh, I do love this. This penthouse room is beautiful, what with the 5-poster bed and all. And then at 6 in the morning, there's, where's the bucket? He's shouting about the bloody bucket. I've still got the bucket. I haven't stopped being sick. Oh, hang on. It's not the faux ivory bucket. And you rang up. You went, right, we're going to breakfast now. Someone's woken me up. And I went, don't do this, Ricky.
Yeah.
Go back to sleep.
Yeah.
You'll be all
what
grumpy for the
it?
Rest of it. It was about 6:30.
No, it wasn't. It must have been 8.
No, it wasn't. That
really?
Was the whole point. If it was 8,
and
I'd
Robin,
go, you'll be
Robin
fine.
Robin stays up on tour and doing his blog till 3 a.m. So he just probably... And he gets insomnia, don't you?
Yeah.
So he's always just falling asleep like a little owl.
Get up, we're going to have breakfast. And then even by the time we started having breakfast, oh, I'm furious, I'm so tired. Oh, I can barely eat this scrambled egg. Ow. I said, I told you this would happen. It was that bit. It was a number of times of saying, I told you this would happen.
Oh,
no, this is going to be a laugh. Let's all get up early.
What Robin didn't understand, right, when he came on tour, right, he was very handsomely paid, right? He thought that it was for his 20-minute stand-up. It wasn't.
Oh, no,
it
I knew.
It
I
was
knew.
For the other 23 hours
no.
a day.
I'll tell you what, you could say, by the standards of being support, because support acts, I've just found out how little they're paid by musicians. It's ridiculous. But I would say... Reasonably, by the standards of the comedy industry, reasonably well-paid support act. By the standards of the escort industry, very badly paid. And really, as you said, it was the latter job that I was there for. Come on, let's go out and do archery, just in your shorts. Oh, my God.
I'm going to die. I'm going to die.
Here's Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Right, this is low roar, just a habit. Oh. That was Low Roar and Just a Habit. I'm here with Diane Morgan, Robin Ince. So, Robin, lowest depth of misery. I'll take me waking you up at 6:30. We don't want to go too dark.
Yeah, you don't want a real one.
No,
you know?
I know. It's a bit depressing.
It's the same question as the other one, isn't it?
What?
Well, you know, the misery question. What's the worst thing that could happen to you?
Oh, yeah, sort
it's
of.
It's sort of the same thing again,
yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly.
I don't know, there's misery and there's pain, isn't there? So it's kind of physical, agonising pain. I mean, which will be miserable.
Yeah, you
but
can't
I know what you mean.
You could have both at the same time.
It's a weird thing, that Proust questionnaire, because the main thing I remember from his book was just someone remembering a lovely smell of cakes. There's no cake questions there at all, are there?
No, there's no cake questions. No,
you won't have read that.
Okay, here's what. Let's end with this then, right? Oh, this is good for Robin.
Hang on, no.
Oh yeah, misery. Misery. But mine would be my mum fucking dying of lung cancer.
Well,
yeah,
exactly.
Don't want that,
that's
do we?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I refuse to answer that. It's
exactly.
No, but you have to come up
do
with
one like
that,
Robin's,
that,
like someone annoying you
of,
and thinking, I don't want to
do
this job.
Sat by a bedside. You know that is, it's not great.
Yeah.
So, fun misery. What is your lowest, you know, in terms
not
of
actually someone dying.
A level of despair, which looking back now, we can have a wry take on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Was there a job you wish you hadn't done and you had to be there for, like,
like Robin Doan on tour with me. That's a funny, yeah. That's a funny 60 right. days of misery. Luxury hotels, playing to 10,000 people, but hating every minute of it because I'm making him eat a prawn.
I didn't hate every minute of it. No. I found some of it quite... But it does, in my vision now, I see me all stood at the roadside in a lay-by smiling, and then suddenly this little tour van come up with a cartoon, you're going, beep, beep. And then I see your face and I go, oh, no. Like, here we go again.
Like the beginning of County Hospital. Yeah. When Stan's going to visit Ollie. Yeah, that's great. Okay, one more, right? Last one, right? Robin, what's your most marked characteristic, do you think? We'd disagree with you, but go on.
No, Diane first, because she didn't answer the last one with the misery thing. You got out of that.
What's
your most marked characteristic? Yeah,
I suppose it's how someone would describe you, isn't it? The guy.
Well, I suppose
she's
so.
The one with,
yeah, but that might be different. Yeah, but some people, it's not just delusional. Do you think you feel differently to some people?
I don't know. I suppose I sound a bit miserable.
Yeah, I'd say that. That's funny. I think that sounds a bit. Yeah, a bit. All right.
Dump. A bit. You know, dour.
Yeah, I'd agree
dry.
With that.
I think you're very dry.
Dry. Yeah, very dry. In a good way.
I don't think it sounds miserable. I think it sounds like this
flat.
Very entertaining detachment from everything, as if you're always just looking back and going, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Well, she did.
It's just the sound of the quality of the Lancashire voice.
Yeah.
Well,
and once you did say that sometimes you just like sitting in a chair and staring into the middle distance
that, yeah.
for hours. So that's...
Yeah, I suppose that.
Yeah, what's yours, Robin? Talking.
Overly frenetic.
Yeah, downloading ideas. It's like, it's like, I mean, you might, I reckon you might have, no more than anyone else, but I reckon you might have a condition because you do need, no, in a good way, you need to download ideas. Do you know what I mean? You can't not download your ideas, whether it's in a blog or talking or... And his memory is amazing. You walk into a room and there's six people there and he say one thing to each of them and it's a story that each one of them dropped in like 9 years ago and he remembers a detail.
Like Rain Man. What
did
he have?
Yeah. Well, that was autism. Right. But, yeah.
No, my dad always is always surprised. He'll always go, I can't believe you remember that. I said, I don't remember that at all.
Who directed Raymond?
Barry Levinson.
Levinson, yeah. He tells a famous story that, you know they have those focus groups where people say, what did you like about the film? What didn't you like about the film? When they're, before it comes out, they do a focus group with 40 people, right? And he tells a story of one of the comments when they saw Rain Man was, we were disappointed the little guy didn't snap out of it by the end. Isn't that amazing? That's why you shouldn't do focus groups.
Okay.
I know, yeah.
Think how many films have been ruined by test screenings.
Well,
think how many films that could have been utterly brilliant and then they have... You know, when you read sometimes about those slightly the darker ending or the ending where it's just... That's why it's independent movies, like people like John Sayles. Have you ever seen the film Limbo?
No.
It's like Kris Kristofferson's in it and David Strathairn Scarface. She plays the sister in Al Pacino Scarface.
Michelle Pfeiffer?
No.
Oh, the sister. Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't know. No.
It is the sister. Or is she the sister? I can't remember. It's the other. She's brilliant anyway. But it's one of those films which at the end, it's called Limbo, and it kind of leaves you going, oh, I don't.
Yeah, I
think
that.
Half the audience left an
going like, I saw it at the Edinburgh Film Festival. You see half people going, whoa, what happened? Whereas I was like, oh, I like that. I really like the fact that even though I'm slightly dissatisfied, it's like watching Lynch movie.
But the audience doesn't know what it needs, I think.
But the reason is because, you know, why films are dying is because they're all the same, because they try and make them so homogenised so people, they please everyone a little bit, so they stay in the theatre an extra week. So it's weird now. It's got worse
and
worse.
When are they going to stop speeding things up and slowing them down? I hate that in films. A little bit speeded up.
Oh yeah, like direction. Someone showing off the direction.
It,
I know.
God, I watched an Al Pacino film called Hangman. And it had that moment where suddenly it goes in slow-mo and it's quite windy.
No.
And the leather coat is being picked up. But I did watch... It was what I have to... Oh, no, I won't say because it's negative, but I would say positive things, which is Leave No Trace. Have you seen that?
No.
It's really good. That's a nice low-budget American movie. Guy living in, I think it's Portland, in the woods in Portland with his daughter, who's a soldier who's got probably post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
And it's... Really, you know that bit with just, it's beautiful, it's subtle, it's perfectly played. I also really like, have any of you yet seen, it's called Sorry to Bother You, the Boots Riley film?
No.
Which is, oh man, it's really good.
I saw the trailer for that and I thought I want to see it.
It's, there's that it's got that thing where you think it's a kind of like a satire on call centres. And then suddenly it goes somewhere and you go, oh, I like that. I like that bit. And it will be one of those films where people go, well, why did it suddenly turn into that? He goes, because you can. That's how imagination works. You don't have to go, oh, it's really good.
I think for the last 2 years since Netflix, and not just Netflix, and you know Amazon Prime and Walter Presents and iTunes, you find like these dramas from around the world that are honestly, I don't think I've watched... an English-speaking drama for like 2 years because there's like Scandinavia and Middle East and stuff.
It's
and
all
French
heroin,
and
though, isn't it?
No, but they're amazing. I mean, you know, I had a sort of irrational fear of subtitles. I thought I could never sort of concentrate. But
I'm all right with them.
I love them.
Yeah.
I love them. I've got used to it now. I need glasses probably. Sometimes I'm not fast enough.
I went to the opera the other day.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow!
Given free tickets, and Royal Opera House, and they have the subtitles at the top because they sing in the original,
right?
So you can follow it.
And does it help or does it make it worse?
No, it helps.
Are they good?
What was it?
Still quite boring. Carmen.
Is that the
Three and a half hours.
She did that all the way through. Do the
I've never been to the opera.
That's what I'm here for.
Have you ever been to the opera, Robin?
I once saw it was Otello, Verdi's Otello. The version of Othello, obviously, and that was in Bristol.
That's how I pronounce it. That's how they want me to pronounce it. So no, that's how I pronounce it.
It's how it is. It's not called Verdi's Othello. It's called Verdi's Otello.
Otello. You know me, know my ways. I'm going to the ballet. Oh, look at the tights. Yeah. Oh, he's a big boy.
Just leave that there. Let's just leave that there. Opera's one of those things where you think, because I always love those scenes in movies where the mafia boss, before he cuts off someone's fingers, suddenly just looks a little bit elegiac and he's listening. He's almost weeping at some opera.
Yeah.
You know, that bit to go that he's also, there's a very different side to the mafia boss. So it just makes me, I start to cry. Cut his fingers and toes off. But I've never been able to get, well, either of those things, cut people's fingers and toes off or opera.
Yeah.
They're both problems.
But it was so good. It was so perfect that you may as well just listen to a record. You know what I mean? Mm. I wanted someone to fall downstairs or something.
Amazing.
Just so that I could prove that it's real.
Why didn't you kick the fat bloke in the bollocks when he turned away?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's entertainment.
I love that. It was so perfect. I wanted someone to fall downstairs.
Yeah.
So harsh.
Just a small couple of steps, a trip.
Well, there's still nothing funnier than someone falling over.
No.
I don't know what it is. I think it's...
Even if it's anyone?
Well,
how bad?
Anthropologists say the first bit of humour, the first bit of comedy was one hunter-gatherer or caveman, whatever it's called, seeing another one bump his head or stub his toe, because it's about empathy. So they knew he didn't mean to do that. So it's visceral. We can't help it. It's something, we see someone fall over. I mean, within reason, if they slip and bang their head, we're concerned. If I fall over, I'm hurt. And after about a minute, I go to Jane, OK, you can laugh now. I'm fine, you know, because it is the first thing.
But it's got to be the high status thing. It's that, I watched
of course.
Death of Stalin. Have
what
you
do
seen
you mean,
Death
no, but if a little old lady falls over...
Nah, not as funny.
No, because we're worried about... if they break a bone or it's like... she's having a bad day, you know. It depends. It's still better in fiction because we know they didn't really get hurt, a good pratfall.
Rick Mayall in More Bad News is still my favourite moment. I watch it over and over again. There is a scene where he's this guy who used to be in a heavy metal band and now he's working in a bank, and it's just him walking down a suburban street giving that in his suit kind of high. and you can't see it. At no point do you know he's about to step in dog shit. It's entirely that, and he just slides in the shit, right?
Yeah.
And it immediately
sliding's good.
Bloody hell, bloody hell, bloody, bloody hell, bloody hell. And then he takes the shoe off and he puts his socked foot back in the shit. And then it's just him covered in shit. Bloody hell, bloody hell.
Yeah.
That to me.
Because we know how awful it is. We've done things like that. Yeah.
That is wrong. It's like there was.
Can I just quickly tell him? We were doing a writing for one of the things, Meet the Kids Raised or something, and Robin came in late and he was stressed and he had a cup of coffee, right? And then someone moved something or he knocked something that went into the coffee and the coffee went...
It was a room where, you know, one of those rooms where for some reason people have just left 14 phones in there.
Yeah.
So you're in one of those rooms, those writing rooms, where it's basically where they store shit.
Yeah.
So there were just wires, leads everywhere.
Okay, and someone moved a phone, the coffee... fell off thing, went into his groin, right? Hot, a whole cup of coffee in his groin. He went, fuck me, I've got to be in these till 1 o'clock. I've got 2 gigs. He stormed off, right, to the toilet, right? Came back and went, I've just kicked the tiles off the toilet wall.
Yeah. And it made me feel better. Yep.
Well, let's play a record.
And it was a fucking latte as well, so it meant that I was. By the time I was doing the gigs, I just smelled of off milk.
I love
it was
that.
Awful.
Oh, Robin smells amazing. Honestly, when I used to breastfeed him, this is the Eagles and Take It Easy. That was the Eagles and Take It Easy. We're certainly taking it easy today. I'm Ricky Gervais, with me, Diane Morgan, and little Robin Ince. Hi, Robin, what are you doing for Christmas?
I was going to say, actually, by the way, you know that bit of people standing and stuff or tripping over?
Yeah.
This is now a story about my book again, but in it, I wrote a little bit about a dictator who gets really angry because none of his assistants have told him he's got a bit of toilet paper stuck on the bottom of his shoe.
Yeah.
And the book came out on the Thursday, and on Friday, Donald Trump went
I know,
went up
the stairs.
Fuck, within 24 hours... of the book coming out, he actually replicated that, but I don't think it's improved sales.
Oh, what is it called?
I'm a Joke and So Are You.
And where can people get it?
Just get it off the internet or in their bookshops.
I'm a Joke and So Are You.
Yeah.
I'm in it, aren't I?
Yeah, you're
there
in
you
it.
There you go.
You're in it, Noel Fielding,
there
Tim Minchin.
Well, they're going to buy it because I'm in
Kendall,
it, Robin.
Sarah Kendall, you've just worked with, she's in it as well. Yeah. And it's quite interesting. The chapter about death is the one that I found interesting, because that was like the hardest one to write, obviously, talking about how people deal with death and how comedy can be useful.
I agree.
Doing stuff about it.
I talk about death a lot because there's something liberating about it. It's something liberating. We're all going to die, so we should enjoy it. My new show, I touched on it in Humanity, my new show, Supernature. It is a lot about, you know, nature is super enough and it's finite and the world's amazing and there's things wrong with it and we're fucked up, but we're going to die soon. So nothing matters. I think it's quite liberating to talk about death.
Also because people in this country, I think, in the UK, people are, they get worried, I was doing an event last night in Nottingham, and people in the Q&A afterwards, people went, what do you think it is? Why is it that we are so bad in this country? And this was someone who's travelled the world, and he's actually, he studies death. That's what he does. He's at a universe. And he said, it's one of the worst countries.
We don't want to talk about
not
it.
Not being able to do it.
You don't want to talk about it.
Talk
yeah.
about it.
Well,
yeah.
just, but talking about it in a useful way, where it actually, like when you watch someone do a brilliant show, which is dealing with death, like my friend Rebecca Payton, who her sister was murdered and she lost her dad when she was very young, and she wrote a brilliant piece of work called Sometimes I Laugh Like My Sister.
Right.
And I know that when people see that or see her talk about it, they actually do, they're given permission to go, I can talk about that. One of my favourite gigs was when someone came up to me and I just thought this level of trust. It was before the gig started, I was on stage and this man wandered up to me and went, hello, Robin, I've been to a few gigs. I said, oh yeah, you came to that Lakeside gig. He went, yeah, I wasn't going to come tonight because it was my mum's funeral. But then I thought, I fancy a laugh, so no pressure. And I thought, you know, was like really the fact that he wanted to communicate with someone that something's gone on. And I found that, I think I told you on the day that I can never remember what actually made it into the book in the end, because surprisingly enough, I wrote a book that had three times as many words as were required. And but I had a story about the fact that on the day of my mum's funeral, I also ended up going to an award ceremony.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it was a weird thing. And my dad said, oh, you're in the UK, you weren't going to be around. You can go to that after. And I was like, what?
I think it's up to you.
how you cope with grief and life. And I think in the bigger picture is I want people to be okay with the fact that they and everyone they know are going to die and there's nothing they can do about it, so they might as well get on with it. And you know what I mean?
Oh, it's a great Malcolm Middleton song. Malcolm Middleton of Arab Strap, play that one day. There's a song he did, and it was nearly a Christmas number one. It got to about number two or three. We're all going to die. He's great, Malcolm Middleton.
Is that the song you mean, where it says everyone you know someday will
die? No, that's Flaming Lips. That's a beautiful song as well.
It's so depressing, though.
Oh, it's not, though.
It is,
I think it's a really beautiful song, because it's like you were saying. I think that I'm sometimes told off for being morose when I go, when people are getting wound up, and I go, it's not worth it. We're all going to die. We've probably only got 30 years left. Someone goes, well, that's a bit bleak. I went, no, it's not bleak, because it's given me momentum. So I do all my fucking stupid things.
Are you meant
things.
To accept it, then?
Well, I did
a
tweet.
Do you accept that you're going
to
die?
Yeah, I do. And I don't like, I'm not looking forward to being dead, but it's like...
Well, you might as well. You're not going to feel a thing.
Exactly.
Being dead's
it's the best
the transitionary period that might be painful.
It's the best thing about being dead. You don't know it. You know, obviously you care about how you die. You want to die with dignity and not in agony and with friends and not low. All those things I get. And
not
you
too
wanna...
many friends. That would be embarrassing.
I know. I don't
know. Like,
shitting yourself
good friends,
and choking.
Every time I come on here, we end up talking about death. Every single show. Every single show I've done ends with death.
Well, okay. We're of an age now.
Let's
You're
talk about
yet.
Christmas then. Christmas is coming up. See, that's the other thing about when someone dies near Christmas. People always think, oh, it was worse because it was near Christmas. Mm. I think, no, you mean Nan dying ruined your Christmas a bit. Well, it's not her fault. Yeah. It's really not her fault. She didn't plan it. She's going, I'm going to hold on to the 23rd and then fuck them.
Christmas. Don't call the undertakers, just wrap her in the paper and leave her under the tree for a while.
We're not doing the funeral before Christmas. This has cost me enough. Put her in the fridge. So what do you do at Christmas, Diane? What do you do?
Well, last year I just stayed in London with Ben.
Yeah.
I had a roast cauliflower.
Oh, wow. A nice roast cauliflower.
Yeah.
Very
one
popular.
Wasn't. Cooked it for hours and hours and hours.
That's
and
too long.
Spices. This is what they said.
Nah,
you've got to cook it for hours in oils.
You know,
you
can make pizza base.
Oh, it was awful.
Oh, I love a crunchy bit of. have you made pizza base with cauliflower?
No,
yeah, it's great.
No. Is it?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, really?
And it's like.
Does it not just crumble?
Well, it's a bit softer, but you bind it with stuff, and it's like you can make it.
All right.
And it's not bread. So,
I love this speed from death to pizza that's happened on
I know.
The show.
We do that. We stay in London and do the folks.
Stay
so, do you do the folks?
Yeah.
What folks have you got?
Yeah, mum and dad.
Yeah.
In
Where's
Wales.
That? In Wales,
yeah.
Yeah,
they've moved to South Wales.
And is that out of the way? Is that
it takes ages to get there. It's 4 hours.
Wow.
I know. And then, you know, I don't drive, so I'm trapped there. And my brother will be there with his two sons,
yeah,
my nephews,
yeah,
oh yeah, they're my nephews.
He's young. He'll be there with his young.
They're very loud. They're 10. You know, twins.
Right.
It's like
I go back to my oldest brother's in Scotland, so but I go back to near Reading, and I stay a night at my brother's and a night at my sister's, and they've got kids. My brother's got so many kids, and their kids have got kids. Even their kids have got kids now. There is about 25 there, which you know, which is great. It's great fun and everything. And that's, you know, it's not like it's like that every day. So I sort of enjoy that. But there's nothing like being at home, is there? Doing your own thing, even if it's your family. You think, can I just go to the fridge and get a, you know?
I sort of revert back to being a child again.
Yeah, and I can. I mean, it's just like open out or anything, but it's still like you can't, you know, sit around in your fucking pants.
I don't.
Jim Jam awful when the nephews and nieces.
No,
are
exactly.
Out.
I'm not a massive fan of it, though. I'll be honest.
Well, no, you won't be a fan because we want to do our own thing.
If you've got kids, I think then you could probably enjoy it because you know you can pretend that
I do
a man
enjoy
the kid. Chimney and stuff.
No, it's great though because I do enjoy the kids and they're a year old.
Yeah.
And I talk to them, it's great. But then, after 48 hours, you can go right. They're not mine.
Yeah.
I'm going back to doing exactly what I want for the rest of the year, which is fun. But you've got a kid.
I've loved watching the process of belief as well in him, because I remember, I think I've told you that.
How old is he
now?
He was,
nine.
He's 10 now. And 10. When he was 5, he walked in just before Christmas and he went, Dad, I know Father Christmas isn't. And then he stopped and he went, oh. and he left the room. I said, what was that? He said, oh, nothing, Dad. And my belief is that
he suddenly thought he wouldn't get presents.
Yeah, he was going to reveal it, and then he was going to go, how costly is this to me?
Yeah, yeah.
What do I not get if I still believe to give me stuff? But I like it. Well, I'll tell you the main reason I like it is because you can't do anything. As someone who likes being frenetic and doing lots and lots of different things, actually having an enforced, I just want to sit here. I want to sit. And I love there's a different sense of
quiet. But that's like Bank Holiday Monday, isn't it?
Nah, it's not the same. There is, if you walk out of your door and you, like if in London you must get that, you walk out and there's a different sense of quiet. You remember when we used to do that thing? I remember when we went Christmas shopping once?
Yeah.
We literally would go into into the store, 15 minutes, well, that'll do, yeah, we'll get that, and then we go and have a drink in the pub. And then we go, another 15 minutes in the store. That's a nice gift for someone. That will do. And just like breaking
it's horrendous. Shopping in London. It's horrendous. But Christmas shopping is terrible.
We did it when everyone, because this doesn't happen as much, but there used to be a little period in London where you'd go to all the pubs that were always packed and they'd be almost empty. And everyone else has fled. And you start, and you do, you listen, and there's a different sense of quiet. Because just things are, and that's what I hate about the
But what do you do at Christmas?
Days.
Because you're I don't say you're never home, but you're on the road. You're on the road. How many days a year are you out doing gigs?
I mean, it's
gigs?
A lot, but equally, 300? Well, it might be, but I have, when I'm at home, I have solid periods of time with my son, so it is like we have three
weeks.
Yeah,
I wasn't just
off.
In that.
Yeah. No, but we have all that stuff. So I love, but I like that thing of it. I don't want anyone to get wound up about going, oh no, the pastry's burnt. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck about the food or any of that. Let's just enjoy the fact that we can't do anything. We can just sit here and we can relax.
I get a bit claustrophobic. I get a bit hot and
again,
of course you get hot. You've had a fucking cauliflower in the oven for 7 hours.
Yeah. Oh no, not a Christmas. No, the actual Christmas is great. Christmas. But I mean, when it's not your house.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're not in charge of the thermostat and the window open.
But I can't drive and there's no trains.
I know. It is like 24 hours of it. You're not in charge. That it's like I as a control freak as well. You know, you want to do what you want. You want to do what you want.
Oh, we stay at home now, so it's just three of us.
Yeah,
and then my son and I, we go right. We walk down the canal. We're sent out. Get out of the way. Okay. Walk down a canal, beautiful, quiet day. Every now and again, you walk past someone who looks really suspiciously at you, like, I thought this would be the perfect day to dump a body in the canal. And you really... Because there's a canal near where I live, and there are certain times you walk down it, you can just see the surreptitious look of people.
Where do you live?
Just off the Grand Union Canal. All of it.
What's the Grand Union Canal?
It's really big. I love because I
where
know
are you,
that.
Where do you live in the UK?
It's just
now.
Outside London, about 30 miles outside of London, 30,
oh, right.
30 miles north of London.
Oh, right.
And
right.
It's really, and I also love canals because I have a huge,
I'm fascinated by
narrowboat, the Celebrity Narrowboat Show. Do you know what? That's the one time I would tour with you.
Celebrity Narrowboat Show?
Yeah, where you get people like Timothy West and Prunella Scales.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that bit of that.
And they go down a canal and it's just like, and that's when I know I'm older because you go, what do I want to watch tonight? Do you want to watch something with a load of shooting? Up. No, I don't. I want to watch two elderly Shakespearean actors sometimes having trouble with locks and occasionally remembering when they were
together. I love that's discovering little things around England. Those cookery shows where they go somewhere and, like, you know, get a barn and they cook something for the villagers. I love that as well. I love England. I love going around England. So you were about to say you'd come on tour with me if we did it in a little boat.
If we do it, narrow boats.
Imagine that. Yeah. So I'll me and you in a narrowboat, is it just us or is that we got like a driver in a little...
Fucking hell, imagine us trying to get the narrowboat. No, you wouldn't be able to do it, neither would I. It'd be rubbish.
So we've got like a boat chauffeur.
Yeah, we have to do the locks ourselves.
Separate little rooms.
Yep.
Yeah.
But there would be little rooms, yeah, because of narrowboat. So that is the narrowboat tour of England.
How long would you be touring for?
About 3 days.
Hold on, though.
About a day. Look, I suddenly realised what I'd said.
Like originally,
I was saying a month, and I suddenly remembered. Now, as opposed to a lay-by, I'm sat at a lock, and I'm smiling, and then suddenly, peep, peep. Oh, bloody hell, it's the narrowboat back to Ollie in County Hospital.
We could have called it Fat Man and Robin if Robin wasn't fatter than me now.
I don't know if I'm fatter than
you. Oh, yeah, you are. Yeah,
I'd say,
you're probably...
Jane, the mirrors are all broken. Jane, we're going to have to go back to the fairground. These are the wrong mirrors.
Let's play a record. Oh, my God.
Oasis, Little by Little. Oasis, Little by Little. We've had a good time. This has been another episode of Ricky Gervais is Deadly Serious with me, Ricky Gervais, Diane Morgan, and little Robin Ince. We've chatted about all stuff, haven't we?
Yeah, pizza, death, the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah. So any messages for our lovely listeners?
I hope you have a very happy Christmas. Have you watched the Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly doing Bing Crosby and David Bowie?
Yes, Bowen? I watched.
I love that. Every Christmas, that's one of my Christmas traditions.
I skip through bits. Was it a direct sort
it's
of lifted...
It's verbatim, right. Apart from the pushing over the Christmas tree at the end.
Right. Well, what's the point of that if it's just...
That's what I love about it. I love this thing where when you first watch it, because most of us are used to the song,
Peace
and
Earth,
and then
waiting.
You go, they're literally...
Oh. Yeah, I see your point. What's the point if it's
that's
just...
That's what I love.
Just watch the original. It's funny enough.
I know, yeah.
There's a brilliant writer called Jeff Dyer, and he's written a couple of books, one about Where Eagles Dare and one about the Tarkovsky film Stalker, where... He literally just describes the film. The whole book is him describing each scene. And I love things
What's
like
that thing you used to do in your crap book club? What was it called? No, it was called something like that. Yeah. Was it called Bad Book Club? Bad Book Club, right? And you read from a... It's a review of porn films or something.
It was called Stag Movie Review. Right. It was this book that I found in the Notting Hill Book Exchange, which is one of my favourite bookshops because it actually has a sign saying, please do not smell these books until you've got them home. And it's just this book which... It's long reviews... of stag movies, which were basically one reel, 20-minute films of some people having sex. Yeah. But it would be very... It would be written, at this point, he removes her bra, which is a lacy affair with a light pink... At that point, the man is now erect. And it just would go on and on and on. And then it would have a little critique at the end. And one of them, the critique, just said something like, the positions are finite and interesting... The room where it's made was probably English. The television set is Japanese. And it's literally as if you're then going to go, do you know what? I didn't know if I was going to watch this three sailors and two women thing. I was a bit uncertain, so I didn't know what kind of make the television was. But let's watch it. And it was, and it would have, and it, oh, one of them's called The Beauty and the Boxer. Ooh.
Oh, I don't want to know.
No, you don't. But it
did
was
they,
not,
did they review? Did they, was it all horrible stuff? Or was there some light-hearted stuff? Like we were talking earlier about Jim Davidson's.
Boobs in the wood.
Boobs in the wood.
Oh.
Boobs in the wood. Boobs. There are boobs in the wood.
With Charlie Drake.
Boobs.
Oh, here comes Baron Hardon.
That is so British, isn't it?
Yeah.
And a bawdy sort of. I love the idea of that.
What was the follow-up called?
I don't know.
Something even worse.
Yeah. It went to the goes, oh, an idea. I got an idea for like a panto, but it's adults. Oh, what's it called? It's called Boobs in the Wood. Oh, what's that then? It was just boobs. Those are fucking boobs. What are they on? No! There's not a tax. They're just fucking boobs lying around in a fucking wood. All right, Jim, calm down, mate. Calm down, son.
See, I think in some ways that is connected to the English inability to deal with death. Mum has died. What should we do? Let's go see Boobs in the Wood.
Yeah.
That'll get us over her death.
Let's go see this one. Cocks on a beach. This one's called fucking Cocks on a Beach. What is it, Jim? It's just loads of cocks on a fucking beach. Fucking
What's this one called? Called A Lad Inside a Woman. That doesn't even quite work. A Lad Inside a Woman.
No, this doesn't.
No.
Oh, God. Oh, good.
Gran's dead. That was your carry-on film, then. Merry bollocks!
Right. Well, I think...
I think that's a very beautiful ending. Very beautiful
ending. We've got as low as we can possibly go. Well, that's the end of this little series of 10. A new series coming in a few weeks' time. You come back as guests. You're the...
We can talk about our New Year's resolutions.
This has been another episode of Ricky Gervais' Deadly Serious with me, Ricky Gervais, Diane Morgan, and little fluffy Robin. It's kissy, kissy, love, wham.
When are you having Richard Dawkins back on? He'd love to talk about boobs in the wood and all those. I remember the first time I saw a saucy panto.
Bye, everyone.